information theoretic perspective on quantum chaos and report some new results. This is a joint work with Ivan Deutsch at UNM and Carlos Riofrio at Free University of Berlin. So, well, the big picture, the universe as we know is quantum, yet classical mechanics gives an excellent description of the macroscopic world. So we are back to the old question, the tale of two theories, quantum and classical physics. On this cartoon, on the left side, we have the quantum world with entanglement, quantum superposition, interference. And on the right side is Newton's laws, classical mechanics. And I have put chaos here as it is typically associated with the classical dynamics. So the question, the bigger question is, how does classical behavior emerge out of quantum mechanics? And we can look this from the other side, and we can ask, if there is a property, a dynamical property like chaos in classical systems, what are its footprints in the quantum world? And that's the motivation of this talk. So before going into the quantum scenario, let's see classical chaos. Well, there is not one particular definition, but it is characterized by aperiodic long-term behavior in a deterministic system. And the hallmark of chaos is that it is it has sensitive dependence to initial conditions. Two trajectories very close to each other go apart at an exponential rate given by the Lyapunov exponents, lambda, of the system. Now we see that that particular definition fails in quantum mechanics. The Schrodinger equation gives us the unitary evolution and the distance between two initial state vectors is a constant of motion. So, well, that has been said, you know, quite wrongly that there is no quantum chaos. But if you look at the classical mechanics, even the Liouville probability densities and the overlap between them is preserved through classical dynamics. But that still leaves the question, what are the other ways to characterize chaos in quantum systems? Or we might ask, what are the quantum signatures of classical chaos, which basically means trying to find unique characteristics in quantum systems whose classical counterpart is chaotic. Well, I report my new finding based upon an information theoretic approach to quantum chaos. Now, before going into the connection between information gain in a tomographic setting in quantum chaos, let's see a classical analog. Now, it is well known in the classical chaos literature that a classically chaotic trajectory acts as an information source, which basically means if I track that trajectory, I gain information on increasingly fine scales about the initial condition where the trajectory started. All this can be formalized in what is called as the Kolmogorov-Sinai entropy, which defines the rate of information gain about the initial conditions of the system on increasingly finer scales. And the chaos entropy greater than zero is a hallmark of chaotic systems, and it's also related to the Lyapunov exponents of the system. Now, this is, I mean, one take-home message of this is that the missing thing in classical chaos is the initial condition. Otherwise, it's a deterministic system. Well, that's exactly what's happening in tomography, where we don't know the initial state. We'll be dealing with the continuous measurement quantum tomography. Now, the regular tomography protocol, which most of us are used to, is making a lot of projective measurements on the system and then building up statistics trying to estimate the state. Here, what we do is that we have an ensemble of identically prepared quantum systems in an unknown state. And they are collectively evolved, and they go through weak continuous measurement, and we get a measured signal as a time series, a continuous time series, in terms of the expectation value of an observable O sub t of the system. Here, O sub t is an initial observable evolved in the Heisenberg picture. And neta t is just the short noise of the probe. Now, there are some approximations how we get this. The take-home message is that as long as the short noise of our detector is much greater than the fluctuations we have because of back action, we can take this limit and have the measurement signal. Now, here's how the reconstruction algorithm works. I discretize that continuous time signal at time slices I. And if I parameterize my density matrix as in terms of generalized block vector, and then I can write the measurement record in terms of the generalized Pauli matrices. And the idea is to invert this measurement record to get the estimate of the parameters R sub alpha. And because this is an over-specified system of equations, we have got much more m sub I, we take the least square estimate to get the state. Now, in general, such a reconstruction algorithm is not going to always give a positive density matrix. So we put an external constraint of positivity on the system. So one important thing which we will be dealing with is to note that the measurement record, as I have over there, really the probability density associated with the measurement record is a multivariate Gaussian. And the covariance matrix of the Gaussian is going to be something which is going to be important for us. All right, so what is the connection between tomography and quantum chaos? Well, we have the measurement record and the observable, initial observable on the system evolved by the same map. Let's take it for now. Now, the question we ask is, how does the nature of U, the map, affect the tomography process? In particular, we ask that if U is non-integrable, and it, in some limit, it goes to a chaotic map, how does it affect our performance in tomography? So for that, we take a very standard U studied in the quantum chaos literature, the kicktop map. That's the Hamiltonian of the kicktop. Classically, this can be regarded as a unit vector undergoing a rotation about the x-axis and then a twist, which is a rotation proportional to S of z about the z-axis, and it's periodic. And turns out such simple dynamics gives a chaotic phase space. And here I have plotted the chaotic phase space. So basically, classically, it's a vector, a unit vector. So I just plotted the y and z components of the vector. And for our purpose, I'll keep alpha to be 1.4 always. And as we tweak lambda, the classical phase space goes from regular to mixed, more mixed to chaotic. So these are the four regimes we are going to work in. For lambda equals to 0.5, we have a very regular phase space with periodic orbits. As I increase lambda, I get, from 2.5, I get a mixed phase space. At lambda equals to 3, I have almost a chaotic phase space, and lambda equals to 7 gives me a fully chaotic phase space. Now, let's see how do we do tomography when we apply these four maps. So here's basically the one of the central reserves, which is the signature of chaos. On the y-axis, I have the fidelity of reconstruction. Now, this fidelity is obtained by sampling and performing an average fidelity of 100 random states uniformly taken. And on the x-axis, I have the time taken to operate those fidelities. And we see that, and these are for the values of lambda for which I showed the phase space in the previous plot. So not only we see that the rate of increase of fidelity, but the final fidelity obtained is also greater as I increase the degree of chaos. So how do we make sense of such results? Well, if we study the connection between chaos and information gain, one of the quantities that will be useful is going to be the Fisher information. So Fisher information basically tells us how well we can estimate a parameter based on a sequence of data. For a probability density, this is the expression for the Fisher information where the expectation value is taken with respect to theta. And basically, Fisher information tells us the information content we have. And ultimately, tomography is about estimating parameters. And for Fisher information is additive for n independent, identically distributed observations. It's just the n times. So for example, for Gaussian probability density, Fisher information is just 1 over the variance. And the operational meaning of Fisher information comes through the Kramer-Rao bound, which says that if I have my data and I have an estimator t to estimate the parameter theta, then the errors in the data are going to be bounded, are going to be always greater than 1 over the Fisher information. So that was for a single variable. For the multivariate case, we can have we have the Fisher information matrix. And the Kramer-Rao bound just says that the error matrix would be greater than the Fisher information matrix. So for a multivariate Gaussian, which is our case, Fisher information matrix is just the inverse of the covariance matrix. So it's useful to note that the distance between the original state and the estimated state can be written in terms of the collective error in the parameters that characterize the block vector of the density matrix. And then the Kramer-Rao bound reads that the sum of all the errors is greater than the trace of the covariance matrix. So we have as 1 over trace of the covariance matrix as the collective information, Fisher information of the parameter estimation. And this gives us a single parameter to capture the information gain in tomography. So here's the plot of the Fisher information versus the chaoticity. On the y-axis, I have the Fisher information. On the x-axis, I have the time. And again, as the chaoticity in the system increases, there is a increase in the rate at which I obtain the Fisher information in the problem. So we can also study more properties. What really is this chaotic map doing to the system? Now we note that the eigenvectors of the covariance matrix gives us the independent directions in which we make the measurements. In other words, they are our measurement observables. And the eigenvalues give us the signal-to-noise ratio or the uncertainty with which we can measure those observables. So one useful quantity to plot is the entropy of the eigenvalues of the covariance matrix. More the eigenvalues are equal to each other, we can sort of expect to be having a more even sampling of all the observables in our operator space. And for the tomography of random states, that seems like a reasonable strategy. So here I plot the eigenvalue of the covariance matrix as a function of time. Now, again, as I increase the degree of chaos in the system, I get more Shannon entropy, and the system seems to be going to equal eigenvalues faster. So it's also useful to connect these results to the previous studied work. Now, there's an intimate connection between the random matrix theory and quantum chaos. And the random matrix conjecture of quantum chaos says that when Hamiltonian or Fokker map is completely chaotic, then its statistical properties can be described by a random matrix picked from an appropriate ensemble. And the appropriate ensemble depends upon the symmetries of the system. For example, if the system is time reversal invariant or not. And random matrix theory has been hugely successful in predicting the signatures of chaos, like the level statistics, level repulsion, etc. So it turns out that our system does have a time reversal symmetry, which basically means that mathematically it means that we have an anti-unitary operator T, which when is applied to the map, flips the Fokker map. Mathematically, it means that for all purposes, we can pick the Hamiltonian to be a real symmetric matrix. Or in other words, the random matrix ensemble we will be choosing is going to be taken from a distribution, probability distribution, that's going to be invariant under orthonormal transformations. So these are the random matrix prediction for the kicktop. And the blue line is the kicktop in the fully chaotic regime. And the green line is a typical member of the random matrix ensemble. Now all this was done for a spin size of 10. Which means a Hilbert space dimension of 21. But still, the predictions are pretty remarkable. And I have the plot for the Shannon entropy as well as the Fisher information, how well it agrees with the random matrix conjecture. Now, there's something interesting. I know, Marcus, you worked in like thermalization and chaos. So here's sort of my ad hoc take on it. If you notice the Shannon entropy, that saturates to a value. That shows some sort of equilibration of the eigenvalues. But if you look at the Fisher information plot, and it's this plot is for a very long time. It's like time goes to what, 2,000 applications of the map. So it's really a long time limit. I still, the slope of the Fisher information is still very positive. So, I mean, what my take home message from this is that this can be a useful tool to study thermalization in the sense that you are having equilibration of eigenvalues, but still you don't lose the memory of the system. So for example, what I'm saying is that I think I can still do tomography starting from here, and I'll still have a
try reconnecting the cable, maybe.
Okay, yeah. I'll still have the, I can still reconstruct the density matrix. So maybe the system is not losing memory, even if I go for very high dimension, it's fully chaotic. So seems like an interesting connection between what it means, the connection between, perhaps we can discuss it. So this is the prediction for the random matrix prediction for a map which does not have time reversal symmetry. So the appropriate ensemble is the unitary ensemble, and the matrix picked out for predictions is a random unitary matrix. And over here I show the fidelity on the y-axis, and the x-axis is the time, and it agrees very well even for a dimension of 10, a dimension of 21 dimensional Hilbert space. It agrees very well. And once again I have the Shannon entropy, which seems to have equilibrated. This really is the, I did some asymptotic analysis on it, and seems like it does tend to saturate over here. And really, this is the Fisher information, which is, even after a long time, I still have information about the system. So I guess we have an interesting new connection, a new quantum signature of classical chaos, trying to unify the picture where we treat classical and quantum chaos on the same sort of footing and try to find a quantum analog of the Kolmogorov-Sinai entropy. And quantum chaos intimately is related to the information gain, and we do get a very nice prediction with the random matrix theory. Now I have a plethora of different directions. I'm exploring parameter estimation using chaos, as future direction, the fact that quantum chaotic systems are so sensitive to perturbation. Maybe they can be used to measure parameters. And what consequences does it have to as a signature of chaos? The other thing is that in the past, I've studied toy systems. And now this is a bipartite system of the nuclear spin and the electron spin. And they are coupled together with the electron spin being periodically kicked. And classically, this can be viewed as a precession of two spins around each other, with one of the spins being periodically kicked. And I've studied the entanglement between the system as a signature of chaos. Now, on the left, we have the classical phase space, where you see the regular islands and the chaotic sea. And on the right side is actually the contour plots of the long time average entanglement. And we see how remarkably well the long time average entanglement picks up the features of the classical phase space. As a future direction, I am doing this calculation in connecting quantum discord and chaos. And really, if discord is a true metric of the correlations in the quantum world, then I expect to quantify the amount of quantum information generated by quantum chaotic maps through discord. I guess that's it. Thank you.
Questions? So, I'm trying to understand the sort of basic setup. You have a chaotic system, and then you're also doing tomography.
Right.
How does the timing work? So you have your system is evolving whilst you're doing tomography, is that right?
Yes, so the idea is that, so coming back to, so I do have an ensemble of identically prepared systems which undergo evolution.
Okay.
And the tomography is happening continuously.
Right.
But the question is that if this evolution itself is from a map whose classical counterpart is chaotic,
right,
then how much information I generate in this tomographic scheme?
How much information you generate?
Yes, yes, for tomography. So this is precisely exactly like the classical case.
Just go back to that slide again.
Sure.
So, and the state that you're trying to reconstruct, is that the original state?
Yes. Yes.
So although this system is evolving in some,
right.
Some way that corresponds to a classical chaotic map,
right,
you're trying to extract information about the original state.
Exactly.
Through
because
continuous measurements.
Exactly. Because I'll have the measurement history.
Okay.
And everything will be embedded in this history. And the idea is to invert this map.
Okay.
Invert this measurement record to get an estimate of the state.
Okay.
And the question I ask is, how does my rate of information gain, as directly as in the classical case, how does this rate of information gain change when this map has chaotic properties?
Okay. And so the rate of information gain depends on what actual particular data you collect. Like if you're presumably have some curve or something where you're gaining information. If it's got more features, it would gain more information. How is the data recorded? Is it recorded as a graph or the value of some quantity?
So data is just these numbers, m sub I. This is a time series.
Okay.
But
so each and I is so time is discrete.
Yes.
Okay.
Time is discretized.
So you have a series of these values over some times. And
yes.
If that's a flat series, then presumably you have little information.
Yes. So really, what's happening is that the let's see, the probability distribution. Probability of having M given R, the parameters.
Okay.
This probability distribution is a multivariate Gaussian. Okay. It's going to have very sharp peaks if I'm doing very well. Okay. And it's going to have a very large variance, then it's going to be, and that's exactly what I see in my calculations of the fidelity or the calculations of the Fisher information, that this multivariate Gaussian is very narrowly peaked, and that can be well quantified by the Fisher information when my map is chaotic. And it's pretty, the Fisher information doesn't grow at that rate when it's a regular map. So one interesting thing would be trying to take it into the large dimension, have some kind of an open quantum system analysis, and see if I recovered the Lyapunov exponents.
Do you have a sort of an intuitive explanation as to why you have this these features here?
Well,
I mean, presumably it's the result of a calculation that you must have some intuition.
Right. So what really is happening is that the chaos in the map is, so first of all, kinematically, all these maps, these four maps are the same. The regular, the mix, the more mix. So basically, as far as the number of directions in the operator space I'm measuring, they remain exactly the same for all these maps. But what's happening because of chaos is that my signal-to-noise ratio in each of those directions of sampling is improving. And that's why the probability distribution I get has less uncertainty, which is quantified well by the Fisher information. So chaos is actually giving rise to more information generation in the sense that it's improving my signal-to-noise ratio in the directions. And that is quantified by the Fisher information.
This continuous measurement,
mm-hmm.
So presumably it's not a hard PV measure, but it's a kind of soft measurement that's taking
place. Right, right.
It would kill all the information straight off.
Exactly. So yeah, that's a good question. So if I have a very, very strong measurement, then I'll have huge back action. And you know, people do this kind of experiments where they have a huge back action to have many body correlation, squeezing, entanglement in the system. So that was one side of the spectrum. What I'm looking at is the other side of the spectrum where the continuous measurement is very weak. In what it really means is that the short noise of the probe is much greater than the fluctuations I will see. So it's sort of a mean field approximation.
Okay, I get the picture.
Yeah. Sure.
So in the slide, we did have the graph of fidelity as a function of time for the different degrees of chaos. This is for the specific case of the kicktop Hamiltonian.
Yes.
So do you expect this to be generic behavior for chaotic quantum systems?
Absolutely.
Have you looked at other Hamiltonians?
I have looked at double kicktops and stuff like that. But having said that, you know, kicktop is, and the kicktop results are very universal. And I also showed you the agreement with the random matrix theory. And, you know, one way to look at it is that, you know, how well the random matrix theory, which is also a very, very universal for all sorts of chaotic maps. So how well the random matrix theory is agreeing with the kicktop, I would assume that other chaotic maps would be. I'm actually pretty sure about it.
Any more questions?
So do you actually expect to get a similar curve with a growing information gain if you wouldn't like measure continuously?
Mm-hmm.
But say you do one measurement at a time and and destroy the system, you know, and just ask how much could I get if I could do a certain set of coarse grained measurements at a fixed time. Then you also probably
I see.
Would you expect to get something similar? That seems to me because kind of stuff spreads out.
Yes. I think that's a very good question. I mean, really, the motivation of this work was to actually see how the dynamics are driving the information gain. That's why we disturb the system very little. What you're saying, I would expect the similar behavior, but then the system would be driven by huge back action. So, you know, I mean, referees could have a problem there. Is it a true signature? Or, you know, the uncertainty you're getting is because of huge back action. So that's my take on it.
Any more questions? Okay, let's thank Speed Billings.